continues. Krishna is about to reveal transcendental knowledge to Arjuna, the first installment of transcendental knowledge. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. And what is the purpose of this knowledge? It's knowledge is a step on the great journey to Krishna. When we say to Krishna, we mean to our relationship with Krishna, awakening our relationship with Krishna. Knowledge is a step in that way. It's not, obviously, it's not the end. Say if you like to, giving a contemporary example, is say if you know how to use a computer, does that mean, is that the goal? To know how to use the computer, or is the goal to use the computer for some particular purpose? Obviously, it's a machine that's supposed to be used, not just knowing how to operate it. So similarly, material existence is a facility, an opportunity, a chance. As Prahlad Maharaj said, Komara Matsere Pragyo Dhamang Bhagavatani Ha Dholabam Manusya Janma. That this life is so rare. Dholabam. Dholab means very rare. Very rarely obtained. Dholabam manusya janma, human birth. And although it is temporary, like all other births that the soul takes, but one can get the most valuable thing from that. And that is, what is the most valuable thing? That depends on what one values, what one's standard is. Because if one's standard is accumulating money, for example, then certainly human life is also the most valuable opportunity, because monkeys don't have bank accounts. Then again, they don't go into debt either. But no other species of life has the facility, the advanced intelligence that a human being has. So to use that intelligence to gain the greatest thing, that is proper intelligence, that is actual intelligence. So what is the greatest thing? Now that is the subject, can be a subject for great debate, especially in religious circles or spiritual circles. People will generally, they'll not agree on what the greatest gain is. Typically people think to become the supreme. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? To become the supreme is the greatest, because the supreme by definition is the greatest, and if you are the same as him, then you've obtained the greatest thing. But the Vaishnavas, especially the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, don't accept this, that to become the supreme is the greatest. Why? Why don't they accept that? Okay. What do you mean? Okay, but if we could become, that would be the greatest thing then. Okay, we're not right now. I mean, this is the way people are thinking. I mean, this, and it's reflected to everyone's activities in this world, the attempt to become greater, 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 greatest. So why don't we accept that?
Because they don't want to lose the devotional service when they are in. If they become one with the Lord, then they lose their service.
They lose their service. But how do they know that becoming one with the Lord isn't better than serving the Lord?
It's contrary to the inherent nature of yourself.
Well, that's what you say. Well, that's not what they say. I mean, there's a famous example. I think it was given by an archdemon, but it was still, it's a good example. They said, which would you rather be? Which has more sweetness, being sugar or tasting sugar? What do you think? But I know I want to ask that to some person, as he said, being sugar. But the sugar can't taste itself. But how do we actually know? So this debate between the impersonalists and the Vaishnavas, it has been going on, it is going on, and it will be going on. And it is and they both are quoting different sutras to back up their points. But well, what does the Supreme do for pleasure? That's an interesting question. Huh? Yeah, you understand that. And of course the impersonalists will say he doesn't do anything. He is all pleasure. But certainly for pleasure, he doesn't go into the material world and enjoy as a pig or a dog or a rat. Right? I mean, that he wouldn't do for pleasure. And that's what the impersonalists have to say. He puts himself under delusion, and the Supreme, the Parameshwara, becomes jiva by deluding himself. Now, if he's all pleasure, I mean, what kind of pleasure is that? To become a derelict somewhere, to become a war victim, a victim of child abuse, to become murdered in some dark alley somewhere. He'd have to be a little bit to get pleasure from that, to do that to himself. No sane person will do that to themselves. And he would obviously be the supreme sane also. So there's a bit of illogic in that. That if he's done it to himself, but if you accept that the jiva is eternally part of the Supreme Lord, but he's tiny and insignificant, and therefore he can come under the sway, due to his free choice, he can place himself, because he's so tiny, he can become deluded. He can make a mistake. The Supreme can't make a mistake, but the tiny jiva, qualitatively, the same as the Supreme, but quantitatively insignificant, he can act foolishly and still be under the control of the Supreme Lord, who allows these things to go on. So anyway, the journey back to the Supreme, to our relationship with the Supreme, to awaken that, where does it begin for Arjuna? Interestingly enough, where does the journey back to Krishna begin? When he surrenders? Well, what led him to surrender? Yeah. So what was it in the seeing? Seeing is one thing, but he saw his family members and he had to fight them. But so many other living entities were seeing. But what was in Arjuna's consciousness? He was in despair and doubt and confusion about what he should do. So interestingly enough, despair and doubt and confusion were the first steps out of the material world, out of material consciousness, and into the service towards progressive spiritual life, and ultimately into the loving service of Krishna. It was just the opposite of what you would think. And later on in the seventh chapter, Krishna says this: "Sator vidha vasantema jana sukritinoas and artigigyasaratati." When someone is in distress, this is the usual thing that shakes our illusory desire or self-satisfaction, complacency in the material world. Something isn't happening the way we want it to happen. Then we're becoming very disturbed and distressed and miserable. And that causes us to ask deeper questions. And if we don't ask deeper questions, if we're not Sukhitana, if we don't ask deeper questions, there are people who do other things when they're in distress and in difficulty or in doubt. I mean, people blow themselves up, they blow up other people, they take intoxication, they lose themselves in this 50 million distractions. They gamble, they eat, they go on this binge or that binge, looking just for something to cover up the anxiety and distress, which is actually always there in material existence. And Arjuna then took the proper next step. He placed himself before the supreme Vidvan, the supreme knower of truth, and said, what should I do? And Krishna, this is the first thing he does, is doesn't just say, do this and do that and do that, but he wants to get him in the proper consciousness to do something. Because we can do everything in the wrong consciousness, and we can do everything in the right consciousness. And what Krishna wants Arjuna to do is act in the right consciousness. And in the highest perfectional stage of bhakti, where the relationship with Krishna is most intimate, the people are doing the most simplest things, like milking cows and herding cows and churning butter and making flower garlands and cooking simple things. These are the activities of the most exalted people, but what's most exalted is not the activity exactly, but it is the consciousness. Yeah, the consciousness is filled with perfectional consciousness. It's filled with love for Krishna. And therefore they are in Vrindavan. And this is where the journey ends. The journey begins for a soul in the material world with some feeling of incompatibility with my circumstances. If we feel fully compatible and self-satisfied and everything is just right, then there won't be any need to inquire. But don't worry, the material world doesn't allow us to feel self-satisfied and continuously, because it's just not built that way. Why isn't it built that way? Because, why? Because there's incompatibility, because we're eternal, and everything in the material world is shifting and changing. And according to our fate, our karma, we move this way and this way and this way, and that also isn't in our control exactly. We like to think that we are in control. Take control of your life. But you can't be in control of your life. You can take responsibility that I'm here in the situation I'm in because of my fate, things I've done in the past, my decisions in the present, but I can't take full control over it. And that is not possible, because we are not the supreme controllers, even though it's hard to accept that, but we are not. So Arjuna is taking the step of asking Krishna what to do, and Krishna's going to give him knowledge. He's first going to tell him the most basic truth, which is so essential actually for spiritual life, but not just to know it, not just to believe it in faith, but to act accordingly in a practical way, but act accordingly. So the first thing that Krishna is going to say, we read 11 yesterday, which is the Sobsahan, which is just come, you're lamenting for that which is non-lamentable. And then, Natvevaham jatunasam natam neve janadipaha natchayvena bhavishyama savimayam ataparam. He's going to explain something, and in the next verse he's going to explain it a little more clearly. But here he says, never was there a time, because Arjuna is afraid of, he's confronted with the death of so many of his relatives, the imminent death of so many loved ones. And Krishna says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you. So Krishna says, I have always existed, nor you. Never was a time that you not exist. And you have always existed, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So, never was the time when you did not exist, I did not exist, and all the people you're seeing assembled before you, there was no time they did not exist. In the past, they existed. In the present, they existed. And in the future, they will exist. So this is a very heavy statement, because you have to think about it, though. Well, there's a king over there with a long beard, and his name is Bhishma Dev. And he is very, very old. He is the Pitamaha. He is the grandfather of the dynasty. But he was born. And yes, he has a benediction that he can only die by his own will, but he will die. So what do you mean that there was never a time when he did not exist, or myself even? I was born and old. And what do you mean? Because obviously then, if we think about it in terms of the body, the statement isn't true. So the person is eternal, but the body is temporary. So within this simple statement, which is the first thing that Krishna is basically telling Arjuna, there is knowledge. And the knowledge is the difference between the soul and the body. And what is the difference between the soul and the body? First is, we are the soul, and we are not the body. And the body is temporary, and the soul, who I am, is eternal. In other words, I'm eternally something, or someone, but who I am eternally, forever, is not my body. So this is very confronting, because Krishna is saying something that completely contradicts how I live my life and what my direct experience is. But it's interesting. Even though we think of ourselves as our body, and Krishna is saying we are not our body, we do say, this is my hand, so that, and this is my nose, and this is my forehead, and this is my knee, and this is my foot. So that means that there is a possessor of those things, and that possessor is me. The one who possesses or owns those things is me, and the foot and the hand, and the ear, and the nose, and the mouth, and head even, isn't me. So if I think I'm my body, but I'm not my hands, or my belly, or my knee, or my foot, or my ear, or my forehead, or my hair, if I am my body, but I'm not those things, then what am I? Or which part of the body is me then? Well, it's very interesting that I used to live in, like usually, let's see, if you point to who you are, point to who you are, where do you point? Everyone. Where do you point? Yeah, some people point here, for sure. Some people point here. And when I was in Japan, I found out where they point to. You know where they point to in Japan? Their nose. I can't understand exactly why, but they point to their nose. Did anyone ever been in Japan? Have you been in Japan? Well, next time I see a Japanese fellow, Mataji, you could ask them, who are you? Anuni? I think a lot of us point to here. And point to here. Where do you point?
Here.
Cover a lot of territory that way, just in case. Where do you feel yourself existing?
When I'm happy here, when I'm sad here.
Well,
when I think here, when it's not here.
Well, what do you, when you feel yourself happy or sad, do you, what do you feel yourself with, happy or sad? But what do you feel with? Who is the feeler?
Me. I feel
I feel happy or sad, so you're not the feeling.
No, I feel it. My body's showing.
But you're not the, your body is, but you're not the feeler. You're the person who's experiencing it.
Yeah.
And where are you? Where is the feeling is here, but where are you?
Somewhere.
Somewhere. Well, that's the point. We don't know. We don't know where we are. We don't know who we are. What are we doing here then? We don't know who we are and where we are. So it can be quite bewildering. So therefore, we have to listen to what Krishna says, otherwise we'll get really bewildered. So he's saying, you always existed, even though your body has not always existed, and your body is existing now, and your body will exist for some time, and then it will cease to exist. And then there's so many interesting questions that can come from this, but let's hear what Krishna says. Well, like if you say, I'm somewhere here, well then you ask the question, well, how did I get there? I mean, okay, I'm somewhere here, maybe I'm here, maybe I'm here, maybe I'm here, maybe I'm... We don't think of ourselves as a feet, though. Generally not. I don't know anyone who...
And then you got a sore foot.
A whole consciousness goes with this pleasure or pain. But then one asks the question, well, if I'm here, and you're there, 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 and you're there. Well, how did I get there? I mean, I didn't seem to have very much of a choice. I didn't say, well, I think I'm going to go into this particular body, or that body. I mean, I would have made another choice, maybe, if I had a choice. So, who put me here? And then you think, well, if someone put me here and put everyone else there, that person must be very powerful. And he's not only the people in this room he's placed, but he's also placed all the people, the 6.5 billion people in the world. And he makes sure that they all, that this power who does this must be very powerful, because they all, their bodies are getting older, there's bodies being born, and people, and life is placed in the newborn ones, and it's taken from the old ones. So this is all going on, and in such a systematic way, it's hard to believe that there's no great intelligence behind it. It is difficult to believe that it's just either by chance or by something with no, that's not personal, with no characteristics, it's all happening. Because that contradicts all our experience in life, that things get ordered by chance. So, these, if we think about these topics, not only just hear them, even hear them in good consciousness and accept them, but if we think about them, they have so many implications in our life. So many implications. And not only, and listen very closely right now. Here outside there's a... Huh? You did. That is not a cat. You hear it?
Earlier.
Oh, it was a cat that was here before. We never make mistakes or anything, but there was a cat out there before. What did the cat say? Okay.
Meow.
Meow, okay. You know what that is? We found out what that was by Adrian Pupil's great research effort. It is a mourning frog. But not because he's evening. No, he's still going. But there's a living entity, there's a life, a soul in that body. And all he can do, as soon as the sun goes down and makes that, that's all he knows how to do. That's all he can do. And he lives in some little hole. What a life. And he thinks, wow, this is great. So we can think, what a foolish morning frog. But we're different kinds of frogs, but we're not very different. Because we think, what a life I have. So who's imposing all this upon us? Someone very powerful. In fact, you could say all powerful, because the morning frog can't do anything other than he's doing. And the mosquito can only do what he's doing. And basically humans do what they're doing. So he's imposing, forcing very strictly this upon everyone. So Krishna continues to speak, giving this knowledge. So the first point, we developed other points from the first point, but it's simply that you are eternal. And since, and that and he's going to say it clearly here, the body isn't you. So simple. We say this is the ABC principle of spiritual life. But it completely eludes everyone of this world, the materialists and the religionists, basically. That we, completely dualistic, that we are completely separate from the body. But not completely dualistic, because we do have a relationship with the body, but the body isn't us. So Krishna says, in one of the most famous verses in the Bhagavad Gita, probably the first one everyone learns, or one of the first ones, Dehenos min yata dehe, komanam yoganam jala, tata deham jala prapir, spiras tatra. So Dehenos min yata dehe, for the soul, the embodied soul, the soul in the body, he passes in this body, komanam yovanam jara, from boyhood, komanam, yovanam, to youth, to old age. Tata dehantara praptiya. And at the end of his body, he goes on to take a new body. And diras tatra namunite. Munite means that he, delusion. Diras, the wise person, the sober person, he is not deluded by the changing of the soul within this body. He's not confused. And then he's similarly not confused when the body drops down dead and the soul moves on to another body. He's not confused, he's not bewildered, because he has broken his identification, that feeling, the imposing the sense of who I am, the sense of self, on the body. And that's what Krishna consciousness means. It's changing the self-concept. Because if I'm my body, then I have a relationship with so many things related to my body. I have a relationship to the country in which my body takes birth. I have a relationship to the family in which I've taken birth. But if I'm not the body, I have no more relationship with them, including the country and family, than I do with the maker of this coat. The coat comes from, it says Kathmandu on it somewhere, but I don't think it comes from Kathmandu, like everything else, including Hema Krishna Babuka, comes from China. Like everyone, everything is made in China. So I don't have a relationship with this. I use it to keep warm, but I don't have an eternal relationship with it. It's not. I think of it as mine, and you know, if it gets dirty, I think, oh, this is bad, and I have to clean it. But it's not me. Like to keep it nice, but it's not me. So Krishna is explaining this truth that is impossible, practically speaking, for someone who is not fully in the mode of goodness to understand. And if someone is in the mode of goodness, then he can very easily perceive it. So, as the embodied soul continually passes in this body, this is something that's directly experiential. Everyone can experience this. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, or girlhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. This is direct experience that we all remember being much younger in age, our bodies being much younger than we are now. Even you. You remember being 15, you remember being 12, you remember being 9, yeah, 8.
Not all of it.
7? 3? You don't remember being 3? Maybe you do. Okay. Does he remember being 3? Maybe he does. What's your earliest memory? I bet Vishwa remembers being 3. No. What's your earliest memory?
5 or 6.
What were you doing?
School.
Huh? Just beginning school? Where?
India.
What did it look like? Describe what you remember.
Many other children.
You remember other children?
Yeah.
And a teacher. And what was the building like? Was it building inside, outside?
Yeah, it was a building.
And what was it like?
It was a big room, and it was full of toys and other things.
Chairs, tables, desks?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
How old were you then?
6.
Okay. Notice I said, how old were you then? So it was you who was there, right? It was definitely you. It wasn't someone else.
It was the body, yes.
But it was also the person within the body. But the body you're wearing now wasn't there. Any more than the shirt and pants that you're wearing now weren't there. The body wasn't there. But you were there. Who has a memory earlier than 5? Any really early memories? Huh? No, you had your chance. You can't remember. Because you're somewhere between here and there. And when you're hungry, you're probably mostly there. We know what teenagers are like. What do you remember? What's your earliest memory, Mother?
3.
3, what were you doing? What were you creating out of styrofoam? What do you remember?
Playing. And when I go to school, ready for on preschool. On the age already picking mangoes.
Picking mangoes.
Yeah.
And eating them too? Of course.
Of course.
Oh, of course. Were they very sweet?
Yeah, my father used to take me every morning. And then show me on the flashlight, you know, what to pick. And on that time, I'm picking even the spoonful.
But he didn't have to show you to eat, yes?
Mm-hmm.
You figured that out yourself, probably.
Yeah.
So that was you, right? That was you. Was it the same person? But in a different body, clearly. So, just by this simple logic, that what's the earliest you remember? Okay, from Gopal Prabhu.
Six.
What do you remember at six? They caught you though, yeah? Do you still have the hole?
Close to.
But it's still there? The mark is still there? So, in the same way that we have changed our body in this life, Krishna is saying, at the time of death, we will change again to a different body. A sober person, a person who sees things accurately, is not bewildered by such a thing. So then, remember, Arjuna is on the battlefield. And this is shocking for him. I mean, if we can think about it philosophically, but just try to tell this to your mother. You know, and she's not going to like this for life. You have no relationship with your family, your mother, your country, or anything like that. And also, we won't like it either, because we feel so attached. And Arjuna was thinking the same way. Okay, I'm not my body. And Bhishma and Drona, who are right before me on the battlefield, they are not their bodies, but this is philosophical. And I'm going to have to kill them. That's what the issue was. That was the stress that I'm feeling. I'm going to have to fight and kill these people that I have a deep relationship with. So we could say, if I'm not my body and they're not their bodies, I don't have a relationship with them. I have a relationship body to body with them, because this is who I have been relating to for tens and tens of years. So what about that? And Krishna speaks the next verse. I mean, I'm not going to be just detached, and you know, I'll shoot them, I mean, the same thing as if you know, we study Bhagavad Gita philosophy, and then someone walks outside, and of course we pray this never happens, but hit by a car or something, and you're not your body. What's the problem? Actually, the problem is no problem, because I'm not your body. That's the real thing I'm saying. But so who cares what happens to you? That's what's really going on. But philosophy doesn't touch completely for most people's full experience. So what? So as soon as they say, I'm going to be disturbed, even though I can accept that they're not their bodies, but still I'll be disturbed to have to fight and kill with them, fight them and kill with them. So then Krishna says another famous verse: Matra sparsas tikanteya sitosna sukadukadaha agama apayano anityas tams tatikshas vabharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, or seeing of Bharata, or descendants of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So, usually our life is not filled with great events like Arjuna having to, life-defining events like Arjuna having to fight with Bhishma and Drona. But there are so many things that do occur in our life, that so many of them bring us happiness, so many of them bring us misery. All day long, our life is filled with these type of events, having to do things we don't feel like doing things that we don't like, doing things that we do like, and then the things that we do like ending, and then so many other things happening. How do we deal with that? We can say it's all temporary, but how do we deal with it? And Krishna says that you should deal with it with the ups and downs, the miseries and happinesses in life. They do come, they will come, they must come with tolerance. Tams titiksasva bharata. They come and they go. They go and then they come again. And then they go and come again and come and go again. And this is life. And we're dreaming that I'll finally get rid of all my troubles so that no more difficulties will come to me anymore. And Krishna says, no, that's like thinking that, okay, it's raining now, but as soon as we finish this rain, we'll just be sunny, and it'll only be sunny, and the weather will be perfect, and yet there'll be enough water and everything like that. No, there's a cycle in life. In the material world, there are cycles. And one of these cycles is happiness and distress. They come and they go. But what Krishna is saying is that you are from a different platform. You have a different existence, an eternal existence. Well, these comings and goings in the material world of happiness and distress, like the shifting sands in the desert, they're always moving and shifting, but they don't have anything to do with you, actually. They don't have anything to do with you. You are separate. According to our fate, according to our karma, according to what we have done in this life and in previous lives, good things will happen, bad things will happen in differing proportions, but good and bad must come to us. There's no avoiding it. But we are actually aloof, separate from the events, good and bad, in this world. We have a different life, actually. We have a completely different life. We are eternal, and we have a life not in relationship with the temporary only, but we have a life in relationship with the eternal. And that is actually how Prabhupada defined Chaitanya Charitamrita in a very early lecture in 1966, 26 Second Avenue. He said what Lord Chaitanya is doing and what Chaitanya Charitamrita means, he's exhibiting the activities of the Chaitanya, or the consciousness, in eternity. In the realm of eternity, now we can all see what the activities of the soul are caught in the land of the temporary, in the material realm, in the land of illusion and mirrors, in the land of misidentification. We can all see the activities of the eternal soul out of place in the realm of Maya, illusion. But what are the activities of the soul, the eternal soul, in the realm of eternity? That is difficult to see. That we have to see with a different type of eye. The eye of knowledge and realization. And according to the depth of our knowledge and realization, we will see that differently. According to our knowledge and realization, will see the material world in one way or another. A fly has particular knowledge and realization limited by his fly body, and he sees the material world in a very compound way, with his compound eye, with his eye, and he only sees what the way a fly sees. And a human, a baby, what does a baby see? What does a baby see? The baby consciousness. Mostly at this age, mother. Mother and milk. And then older, seeing in another way as the consciousness develops. And human life, this is what Prahlada was saying, is meant to develop consciousness to the highest, highest point. So we see the eternal soul, ourselves, in relationship with the Supreme Eternal, the Parameshwar, in relationship to Krishna. This is called Bhagavad Dharma, the process of developing the consciousness that allows us to see ourselves and everything in relationship to Krishna. Because everything has a relationship with Krishna, because he is the absolute truth. That is the meaning of Param Satya, that nothing is outside, external to him. So he has, everything has a relationship, and to see everything in relationship to Krishna, this is the mark of an exalted person, Mahabhagavata. He sees nothing that outside of Krishna. And why he sees like that, and it can't be done just by intellectual adjustment, he sees that way because his consciousness is full of love for Krishna. And Krishna awards him with the ability, by his grace, by Krishna's grace, he awards him the ability to see everything in relationship with him. Then Arjuna hears some more. O best amongst men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both, his consciousness, regardless of his fate, regardless of what the material world, the material energy is throwing at him, a person whose consciousness is fixed both in happiness and distress, is steady and is eligible, certainly eligible for liberation. So the fixedness of consciousness can happen in many ways. On the highest level, it happens when one has love for Krishna, because one's thought is only for Krishna, regardless of what's happening externally. And on a lesser level, one can be also fixed just dutifully, because this is the right thing to do, because I may be happy, I may be sad, like when you have your work, like some days when you were cooking. There must have been so many days you didn't feel like cooking. Yes, yes. And then, but you do it because you have to do it. Because it's your duty, because people are relying on you, it's your duty. So this is another level of consciousness. So there are different levels of being fixed in one's duty. But if one can go beyond the happiness and distresses and keep his consciousness fixed in his duty, he's eligible for liberation. So in this way, activity can bring, and with jnana, with knowledge, there's knowledge that Krishna is saying, that if you have knowledge, it's not that you stop, cease from acting, but you act in a dutiful way, and your consciousness doesn't waver. And that brings one liberation from the material world. So karma mixed, or jnana mixed with karma, will bring one liberation from the material world. So we'll stop here, and tomorrow, Krishna willing, we'll move to 16. So Krishna is going to speak more about the points of the philosophical points about the eternality of the soul. Because this knowledge is what spiritual life is based on, that we're eternal. We're not the body. We're eternal. And if we're our body, we have a relationship with everything in relationship to the body. And if we're eternal, what is our duty? And Krishna will gradually reveal all that, but now he just wants to push the point that we are eternal. We are eternal. We are not the body. We are eternal. We're eternal. We live forever. We do not die. Krishna will say that later. We will not die when the body dies. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Now is the time to look for 15.
I remember in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the soul is actually in the heart, isn't it? And some scriptures, some other scriptures, they say that the soul actually is in the third eye, you know? And I asked him, you know, they say that it's from their scripture. You know?
So when those are the kind of people. When you ask, where are you? They go like this. Try that. See if it fits. Just point. Hema, where are you? Point there. Does it fit? Does it fit?
But the argument...
So maybe some people have there, some people have there. But it's... Yes, what's the argument?
You say that... if you observe how they paint the saints and all that.
Okay.
The saints, you know, always they have an aura around the head, you know. The head, the aura is there.
But not only around the head.
There's aura in the all the body. But they say that the aura is mainly the main aura, let's say, is around the head.
No, that's the painting, but that's a mistake. And also they even paint Krishna like that, but it's not actually true. His whole body is effulgent.
That's their argument. I say,
that's not a very good argument.
The
because there's a painting, and the paintings have, when they paint saints, they put glory and it says, therefore we're coming here. But actually what it is that a person who, that's chakra stuff, where one can manipulate one's consciousness through yogic type of practices, but that's not the soul. That's not the soul. Through yoga, you move the consciousness to different levels. So at each different level, when your consciousness is at the, what is it, Manidhara and Mula Chakra, and then I can't remember the names of it. This is the Vishuddha Chakra, Agya, and Brahmarandram. But when the consciousness is here, or this, it makes one perceive reality differently. And it's also comparable to different, the consciousnesses on different planets. So consciousness of, when the soul, the consciousness of the soul is here, I believe that's Indraloka. This is what the consciousness is like on Indraloka. It's very, very different from when the consciousness of a person is on Earth. Very, very different. But there's higher consciousness too. There's higher consciousness than that. And on the Brahmaloka platform, yeah, that's the consciousness it's got to do with subtleties. Subtlety of consciousness. But this is yoga. This is the practitioners of yoga manipulate the consciousness in this way. And I'm not exactly sure how the soul follows along, but that's not the practices of bhakti yoga, because who is one's advancement dependent upon if you're manipulating your consciousness, moving it upward in this way? It's depending upon your practices. And people can sit like that for their half hour and they can move their consciousness around. But what do they do with the rest of the day? Their consciousness just goes down again. So bhakti yoga is a completely different process of advancement. It's putting oneself in relationship to Krishna. So if one's consciousness is here, in the third eye, that's the Agya chakra, that one has certain abilities. So people like that, they like to have the powers that come from some of these extra abilities, they feel very, very better than others, and they can do things that others can't do. But this is not the perfection. The third eye gives an ability, an implication. It's got something to do with Lord Shiva to see what people whose consciousness is lower can't see, but there are still other chakras that are still even higher. And that gives different consciousness and more abilities. And when one is in the Brahmaranda chakra, there's no identification with the body. One perceives oneself as consciousness, one's ready for liberation. One can actually perceive oneself as consciousness. Not enamored by the powers that come, either. What was your question?
How and why was consciousness created?
Well, consciousness and the soul are exactly the same. The impersonalists say that consciousness and the soul are the same. But according to Vaishnava philosophy, that consciousness is not the soul, but it is the symptom of the soul. There's a difference. So how and why is the soul created? And the soul's symptom is that he's conscious of things. Like we're all conscious in different ways. So your question is why are souls created? And why do souls have consciousness? Consciousness means life. You perceive things. Why does a soul perceive things? It wouldn't exist if he didn't perceive anything.
So why do we exist?
Why were you created? You are created. You're eternal.
Huh?
Souls are part of Krishna. As soon as there's the greatest, there's also the tiny ones. It's like the example we usually give is the sun and the sun rays. So why do the sun rays exist? Well, as soon as there's the sun, there's automatically sun rays. It's not like the sun rays are created by the sun, even though they are created by the sun, but as soon as the sun is there, the sun rays are there. Created by the sun in the sense of their source is the sun. But as soon as the sun is there, there are sun rays. So as soon as Krishna is there, there are also jivas, because this is part of the one absolute truth. So one can ask the same question, well, why does Krishna exist? You want to ask the question? Why does God exist? Oh, because he's God. He's Krishna. He's the absolute truth. He exists. If he didn't exist, you wouldn't be there to ask the question. And not only that, how could he be the supreme truth without existence? How could he be the absolute truth, which means includes everything, if he didn't exist? So the question is really, is there a supreme or not? Is there really a God or not? Is there a supreme Lord or not?
There is, because we are there.
Yeah. Okay. That's because your vision is good like that. But so you're convinced, okay, so as soon as he exists, as soon as the supreme exists, then you also exist as tiny. Just like the sun exists. And as soon as the sun exists, then immediately, boom, little rays exist. But there weren't mobile phones until thousands of years after. And how did they get along? Can you imagine that? For thousands and millions of years, people existed without mobile phones, and somehow they lived. And they didn't even know how unfortunate they were. Could you imagine people so unfortunate? Yes, what was your other?
You know, the example you gave us about the sun?
Yeah.
What if the sun wasn't glowing, there was a sunrise? Krishna is there, but we aren't there.
Say that again?
If the sun is there,
yeah,
and it doesn't glow, then the sun is not there.
So if Krishna was there but didn't do anything?
Yeah.
Well, why create problems? Like saying, what would happen if the richest person in the world was poor? It's very hard to answer that question. What would happen if I was walking, but I couldn't walk? And I was still walking. What would I do? Well, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, Krishna can do anything, but he can't accuse him of being ridiculous and nonsense.
The question is, why is there Krishna
and
why is there
souls? Well, the question is, why is there Krishna? No, that's... As soon as there's Krishna, if you use the example of the sunlight, then immediately there's... The sunlight is there as soon as the sun is there. So then the question is, well, is he there? Is the sun there or not? So if there's no God, if there's no Supreme, then what is all this and where did it come from? So the impersonalists say, well, there isn't anything here. It's just you're imagining it. Well, then you ask the question, well, who's imagining it? Who's imagining it? If it's not real, it's not actually there, that's all we're imagining it, it's illusion, well, who's the one imagining it? Me. Well, if I'm here, that means therefore something's here. So then how did I get here? And how did I get here? Well, I certainly didn't create everything. Well, maybe you did, but I didn't. I can tell you honestly, I didn't. So that someone did it, or something did it, somehow it happened. So our answer to that, and the Shastra answer, is that Krishna did it. And if you don't like that answer, what's your answer? So the question is, why do we exist? We naturally exist as soon as there is a supreme law, the soul exists. Like the sunlight exists immediately, instantaneously with the sun.
So there's something wrong. There's something impossible.
What's impossible?
Krishna cannot stop glowing.
Yeah, he cannot stop being Krishna. That is, he cannot stop being Krishna. And not only that, you cannot stop being you. Yeah.
The charity in the shloka from the Upanishad that the supreme desire to become many.
Yeah. Eko Bhushan. So I remember. I think that's a way of saying it too. It's a way of saying it, just like we give the example of the sun, it's a way of saying it. But because we could say it wouldn't happen if he didn't desire it to happen, it wouldn't happen, because why would something happen against his desire? So we can't say that he didn't desire it to happen, but we can't say that he sat there, he was existing, and then he thought, well, should I or shouldn't I, you know, should I or shouldn't I, should I desire him to come or not? They're going to get in so much trouble, but should I do it?
Well, if you didn't comprehend, you put it into that logical contradiction that, well, if you desired it, you would have the beginning, but everyone knows that you're eternal.
So therefore, when we're describing the absolute truth, we look at it from this point of view, with our logical minds, and we say it in one way. And then we can also look at it from this point of view, and we'll say it in another way. And whichever way you look at it, because it's complete and absolute, and it's greater than our logical, finite, time-bound minds, it's will always be some logical inconsistency, whichever way we look at it. There'll always be some logical problem, because we can only think in terms of time and according to our limited abilities. But when we see the complexities of one day, I have this very interesting video, you'd really like it. One day I saw it. It's a little scientific, but it's about the it's just talking about one cell basically, and what's going on in one cell. This is one little cell in the body, and there are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of cells. And when you see the design of this one cell, it's so far beyond the comprehension of anyone, including the greatest scientists. That you, and then we talk about why does God do what he does? You know, it's ridiculous. We can't even understand the workings of one little cell. So, yeah.
Prabhupada would say, who are you to ask?
Yeah, who's asking?
Yeah.
Why does God exist? Who's asking? excuse me, it's me? Who are you? I was just trying to find out. I'm not quite sure about that. After you find that out, you can come and ask. Who am I? That question, Krishna will explain that you are his part and parcel. Mana eva anso jiva loke jiva bhuta san, eternally, sanatana. You are eternally his part and parcel. This is who you are, and you are meant to serve him. Because that's your eternal identity. Not your temporary identity. Temporary identity means a relationship to the body. Eternal identity means a relationship to the eternal truth, to Krishna. Okay, yeah, next question.
Regarding the temporary identity, how can we tell the difference between our conditioned nature and our nature, like, of course the soul has a different nature, but how can we tell whether it's our conditioning or it is in our nature?
Well, at this point, we should just try to use... We can understand it simply that our eternal nature is to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And when our service is pointed directly to Krishna with full love, then we're acting in our eternal nature. And everything else is our conditioned nature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the simplest way to understand it. So we can take our eternal nature and apply it falsely to the material world and serve in the material world, and that doesn't bring us happiness. So the simplest thing to do is take whoever we are at the present, whoever we experience ourselves as with all its abilities, and try to please Krishna with that through loving service. And then as we become purified by doing that, as our consciousness becomes purified, then more of who we eternally are, and the difference between who we are eternally and who we are temporarily, should become manifest as we become purified. Is that all right? Because right now I'm still thinking, well, here I am, I like to paint. For example, I like to create little Rathiyatra cards. Is this part of my conditioned nature, or is that part of my eternal nature? And then you could drive yourself crazy in that way. So we don't want to do that, so what we just want to do is just use whoever we are in Krishna's service and think, may you become pleased, my dear Krishna. This is who I am as far as, and now let me, whatever it is, let me serve you. Let me serve you. Let me please you. Okay, let's stop. Sounds like it stopped raining also.
I don't have a question.
Well, you can ask it tomorrow. Is that all right? Okay. Srimad